for another silly test of Canadiana. Ian's going to try her first Tim Hortons coffee. Because I keep blabbing on about Tim Hortons, and especially because there's so many Dunkin' Donuts in New York, and it drove me bananas. I miss Tim Hortons. And the standard is the double-double, two sugar, two cream. I always get two sugar, three creams. As you can see, it's bone white. It's almost like the bones of a bird. It might be kind of hot, so be careful. But
It's good.
I don't really know how to describe Tim Hortons coffee. It's like not really like coffee in some ways.
It's like coffee candy.
It's funny that you say that. I was hesitating to use that term, but that's exactly what me and my cousin Dan always call it, coffee candy.
Yeah. I don't know how you say that's so different from Dunkin' Donuts.
Because it is.
I mean, granted, I don't drink that much coffee. And I certainly don't drink Dunkin' Donuts
coffee.
Oh,
God, that's good. That's delicious. There's something about it. Something that just gets my Canadian fucking soul a-buzzin'. Damn, that's good. Yeah, though, that's, to me, that's much, much, much different.
But, really?
Yeah.
It's good. Don't get me wrong. Maybe I don't drink enough coffee to be able to tell the difference.
Part of it, too, is Dunkin' Donuts is so haphazard. They're just like sugar, cream, and you never know. You get different shit every time. It's very consistent at Tim Hortons.
And in my neighborhood, because everyone's poor, it's like you ask for a little bit of sugar and they give you like 6 tablespoons.
Right. And I figure this is probably too sweet for what you would normally get because of the two sugar. And I think their cream is a little bit sweetened also. So my three cream, you know.
That just tastes like cream to me, mostly.
Mostly, yeah. I like my sugar with coffee and cream. That's what I always think of, the Beastie Boys. Yeah, I just love it with the tons of cream.
Yeah, that's good.
Nom, nom, nom.
Are you happy? You feel your strength restoring?
Yeah, but feel free to have as much of this as you like, because I shouldn't drink the whole thing. Yeah, so since I was on my little epic journey of not drinking coffee, and it was actually serving me very well. But today I was feeling wigged out, weird, and like maybe this is the worst time to have a coffee, or maybe this will put me back on the tracks. Who knows?
It's just going to exacerbate your spaciness.
Maybe. And so, I mean, this might cause me to crash a little bit and require a nap, but we've had a nap every day so far, and it's been awesome. So.
We have. Oh, that's a great part about vacation.
So I figure if I get this in me early enough, it won't interfere with my nap. And I just got the medium. It's not too insanely large.
Yeah.
Did I tell you about what I was doing just before I left New York?
What?
I'd go to this one gas station near my house and get the hugest coffee they have and fill it like most of the way up with French vanilla or whatever, Irish cream, whatever flavored coffee they had. And then they had these chocolate flavored creamers and just pile a bunch of those in. And so it would just be super powered coffee. And then I would
super sugar powered coffee.
Yeah, like you couldn't really drink it the way it was. Oh, and they also had like French vanilla flavored cream that I'd fill it up with. Yeah, you couldn't drink that shit. It would murder you. But then I'd take it home and just cut it with milk and ice throughout the day. So I would have just basically glasses of sugary milk with like a bit of caffeine in them. And it would be enough for like 4 or 5 of those. So just throughout the whole day, I'd just be drinking this milk concoction that was slowly infusing me with caffeine.
Thank you.
And it was a... Thanks. And it was delicious. And that kind of worked for me in some ways, that to like slowly get the caffeine, not in a big bam, a big burst.
I like
other news, I decided, now that I slept on it, that the Evan Dando thing seemed somewhat funny at the time, and like, oh, Evan, but it was just very, very sad. Mm-hmm. Very lame. Fucked up.
That's just bad.
Yeah, it seems like, I don't know, I kind of look at it two ways of like, I mean, there is a rich tradition of fucked up rock stars who seem to be able to make their way through stuff. Like, even like the Motley Crue guys, when they were at the height of their fucked upness, could still play shows. So on the one hand, it's like Evan didn't hold it together very well, but in some ways he did. Like, when he was solo, that turned out better than I expected, because he was so fucked up when the band was up. But then when the band came back, he was all fucked up again. I think just that wall of noise just let him feel like he didn't have to try at all, and he could just fuck around. Insulated him.
Yeah, I also think that after the train wreck of when he first came out, you know, maybe you were expecting less, and then he comes out with his acoustic and he doesn't suck entirely.
Yeah, like if that whole show had been his acoustic ramblings, I would have been okay with that.
Really?
I might even have actually posted that bootleg, because I got the whole thing on tape, but there's no need. No need to post that fucking nonsense. Like, it's fucking terrible. Yeah, I don't know, because like, it's still, like, that's when he at least was personable and one-on-one, and at least in his slurring way, being like, you know, hey, sorry, I'm all fucked up. Like, that to me, at least there's some kind of individual touch.
But yeah, you say there's a tradition of rock and roll stars being fucked up and being able to perform. How fucked up must he have been then if he was fucked up and couldn't?
Yeah.
You know, this is the one thing he does.
Yeah, that's true.
This is what he's trained his whole life for, and he can't get his shit together to play his guitar and sing his songs that he wrote.
Well, then that's the other thing, is I wonder if it just gets boring.
Yeah. Well, I think I said it to you while you were in there. It's got to be soul-sucking to be writing your own coattails.
Yeah, that's
from
true.
15 years ago.
Like, yeah, because then the only songs anybody knows would be like, you know, 93. That outdoor type song that everyone was singing along to, that was a little later, that was 96, but that's still a long time ago now, you know, that's still 13 years ago.
Yeah.
And he does a lot of cover songs live, I think, just to keep himself interested, you know, like old country
like
songs
he did
and
Beautiful,
things.
Christina Aguilera.
Yeah.
That made me happy. One of those super fucked up drunk guys singing, I'm beautiful. You are beautiful, Evan. Don't let anyone tell you you're not.
Every day is so wonderful. Suddenly, it's hard to breathe. Now and then, I get insecure from all the pain. I'm so ashamed. I am beautiful, no matter what they say. Words can't bring me down. I am beautiful in every single way. Yes, words can't bring me down. Oh no, so don't you bring me down today. All your friends, you're delirious, so consumed in all your doom. Trying hard to fill the emptiness, the peace is gone. Let the puzzle undone, is that the way it is? You are beautiful, no matter what they say. Words can't bring you down. Oh no, you are beautiful in every single way. Yes, words can't bring you down. Oh no, so don't you bring me down today. single way. Yes, words can't bring me down. Whoa, no, don't you bring me down today. Bring me down today.
So that was our Tim Hortons. Now you've had Tim Hortons and you can be like, meh, what are they always on about? But yeah, it's something about it. It's enslaved this whole country. It's not even funny. It really has.
So am I going to start getting the Tim Hortons shakes?
Probably not. You'd have to live here for a while. But and I don't know, maybe it's just not your thing. Because it really is. Everything around here is geared to sweetness. So. So, Ian was just asking me if I miss the whole Keith and the Girl thing. Because I was saying how if you go in the forums and search for McNally, my name used to pop up all the time, and now it doesn't very much. You know, like twice in the last month or something. Because every once in a while, you know, just check to see if someone said something that I should reply to or something. But no, it's like mostly just that there was a lot of coolness to it, and it's cool that I still have enough residual, you know, people that hooked onto my podcast or whatever, that I get emails frequently enough. That's just nice. It's not overwhelming. It's not too much to deal with. It's just nice to get emails from people about whatever. Here's some song I liked, or I liked your last show. Here's my thoughts on whatever. It's just kind of cool. But being totally ensconced in it, you know, living down the street from Keith and Hemda, was just such a weird thing to do in general, because who the fuck moves down the street from the people who do his favorite podcast, you know, just presuming that you'll get along and be buddies. Like it's quite a strange thing to do.
But you guys had a history. It wasn't like they were strangers.
Yeah, no, I mean, I edited some stuff for them. I opened Keith's stand-up a couple of times, but it's still...
You hung out, right?
Yeah. I mean, I met him. I was at their house before and stuff. But it's like one of those things where any time I think of, like, ways to criticize the Keith and the Girl hierarchy of, like, how weird it is. I guess it is a weirdly stressful... Hey, did you eat that donut?
I did.
How was it?
It was maple.
Right.
I mean, it was a little drier and harder than I expected it to be.
You never know. Like, it depends, again, like, what time of day they bake the donuts. So you probably got an old one.
But it was good quality. It was good quality donut.
Yeah, the donuts, like, I can't really stand behind the donuts. They're just way better than Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, because Dunkin' Donuts always feels gloopy and heavy and greasy. That didn't feel gloopy and heavy and greasy at all. Just a little dry.
So yeah, it's mostly just that whole Keith and the Girl scene, it's very strange because Keith and Hemda are just unusual people. That's why they're the people that can do the podcast and talk 5 days a week and, you know, fill the time. And they have extremely unique, strong personalities. So that's just hard to interface with in the first place. And part of what makes that show so funny is Keith, you know, anytime there's something that he thinks is remotely bullshit, he just fucking blows it out of the air. Yeah. He doesn't hesitate at all. So he's a very critical person. And all that stuff together just makes it hard to just kind of hang out and be buddies with them, because you're always kind of on your toes because you never know what weird thing you're going to do that they're going to think is weird and dumb, and then that gets brought up on the show and it's like...
It becomes an ordeal.
Yeah, it's all much more socially stressful than you would expect from a normal friendship. But that's the thing, is that it wasn't a normal friendship. Like, any time I start thinking, like, oh, this is weird about them or that's weird about them, it always gets undercut by, I moved to New York to hang out with them. Like, that's way weirder. That's the weirdest part of it.
No, that's not so weird. I mean, they're magnetic people. They've pulled a lot of people into their orbit. You know, you're not alone in that. I mean, and you're definitely not alone in moving to go be near them and go be part of the show. It's not like you moved... It's not like you're some weird fanboy who moved to just be near them and bask in their glory. You came and you were on their show.
And it was like an excuse to move to New York in a lot of ways. Because, my original plan was to move in with Spooky, and because I did get along with him on more of a normal friend level, and we ended up not doing that. But then I moved in with Relic, and that was cool. I got along fine with him. So, yeah, a lot of it was that I had these people I knew in New York, because I never would be able to move to New York knowing no one. It would be insane, especially coming from Canada. But part of it, too, was just, like, it's weird to think back when I first was listening to that show in, like, 2005 in Vancouver. And I would just kind of think, like, it'd be cool to, like, be on that show sometime. and now I've been on the show a bunch of times, like, in some ways, it's like, it's cool that I achieved that, but in some ways, it's also just weird. It just still seems weird to me.
Well, it's a strange goal.
Yeah, it is, somewhat.
But you also did other stuff. I'm just, you know, I'm on your team. You know, you put together shows for them. You put together DVDs.
Yeah, I learned a lot of
editing skills.
A lot of video editing stuff through them, because I just find it too boring to edit things I'm not interested in. You know, wedding videos or something, I just wouldn't be able to. And I love their stuff, so it's, yeah, it was a good opportunity to learn all that stuff. But yeah, it is like, it's, and now that there's like, well, there's me and Relic were the two original, you know, castaways who moved in to become part of the sort of Keith and the Girl circle. And it seems like Jeremy's fitting in pretty well, but I remember I had a couple of conversations with Newsy where he was like, he kind of had the opposite, where I got along better with Keith and had a harder time getting along with Hemda. And he has the opposite, where he gets along fine with Hemda. And he just never totally clicked with Keith, because I think it's mostly because he's so open about all of his weird stories from his past of, like, setting up cameras to film his roommates. And just, he was a really dodgy little fella.
But everybody has their past, especially Keith.
Right, but you know, that's the thing, is, but Keith is, and I just thought all that stuff was funny stories. I'm like, I don't, sure, that's cool, you know, I didn't have any problem hanging out with Newsy because of any of that stuff, but Keith really gets weird about stuff, and like, yeah, he's just critical, he's hypercritical, so.
Well, you once told me, like, you have kind of a problem with that they, everything's a problem in their lives, like, they can't go to the store without having some huge issue happen.
Yeah, and it can't always be the other person's fault.
Yeah, I mean, which makes for interesting programming, you know, it makes for a great podcast, but it makes for difficult real-life people.
Yeah.
I thought they were great, but I didn't interact with them constantly.
Yeah.
Also, I didn't listen to the show, and, you know.
Yeah, I can see how, like, I'm... It's so easy to fall behind on that show. They just do it too often. 5 days a week is too much. I'm probably like 10 episodes behind now.
But would you really want to stay up on it? I mean, it's like, it's...
It depends entirely on my circumstances in life. If I have time to fill, like when I was up in the projection booth, I couldn't have enough stuff to listen to. I'd listen to their burn through the Keith and the Girls and then start listening to fucking university lecture podcasts and... This is all kinds of just whatever I could to fill the time. But now that I'm busy and I'm doing stuff, it's harder to fit them in.
It's because you have a life now, baby.
Yeah, sort of.
One of your own.
Yeah. Sort of, kind of. Anyway, yeah, so maybe that'll be interesting to some fellow Keith and the Girl nerds, which I still consider myself one. If anything, I'm like the king of the Keith and the Girl nerds. I moved all the way to New York just to be part of that shit.
I wonder a lot of times what our relationship would be like if we didn't have the weird echo chamber of the show.
But it is like one of those moot points because we wouldn't have met at all.
That's true.
I wouldn't even have been in New York.
Mm-hmm. And I would have.
And you certainly wouldn't have been in Nice Guy Eddie's.
No.
That was only because Bo had heard about it through the show.
Yeah. Also, Bo was in my ear. You should date Keith. Keith is awesome.
See, that's another thing that I don't necessarily miss is like. Most people seem to enjoy me on the show, but, you know, there's the people that didn't. And it's like, who needs that? Well, I mean, yeah, I guess you got your share of the forum's opinions about stuff. And it's like, this is weird. This has nothing to do with the real world.
Yeah, you have to remember these people are not, they don't know you.
Yeah, like positive or negative. I mean, it takes the negative to realize that the positive is also silly.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's like, it's so conflict-free, my life. Compared to being up there, even just dumb shit like getting in random stupid forum arguments with Sexy Potato. First off, who is Sexy Potato? Why am I fucking arguing with her on the internet? Like, what is happening to my life? You know? So I don't miss that kind of stuff at all. That was just weird. Because then, I don't know, even within that show, but then Relic and Newsy would be right there in the house, and that was fine. Like, face to face, people get along. It's just internet. The internet makes people brave and stupid.
What's that internet fuckwad theory you tell me about?
Yeah, just that anonymity plus an audience equals fuckwad.
Yeah, that's that right there.
Yeah, so I mean, it's only semi-anonymity.
Once again,
in this case, but
that makes an awesome show then. If everybody's a dick, if everybody picks their friends apart, if everybody's in a constant fight, people want to listen to it, you know, and they what, like Kate listened to the show where you and I got into it, and I hadn't even realized this while we were on the show, but she was like, I was getting really pissed at that Keith dude, because he just kept, not you, the other Keith, because he just kept picking, and like every time there was like something that he could tell there was maybe a little something behind it, he was like, what do you think about that? And I just wanted to slap him, because you're my friend.
That's where I come at that from a different angle. I always respected the hell out of that about Keith, that his ability, he's like, in that way, he's such an awesome interviewer, because he always knows what to pick and what to get to the next little thing.
It makes for great radio.
Yeah, and he really is perceptive. He really does pick up on little social nuances that people don't.
Yeah.
And even stuff like the best example ever was the show where Hemda's brother was talking about his suicide attempt. And it's like, it's because like, it's very easy to paint Keith as just a loudish dude who just says offensive shit to get a rise out of people. But it was amazing watching him. He's like the fucking log driver, you know, running down the fucking river. That's my Canadian analogy. Going down the river on the log, you gotta jump from log to log, you gotta spin the logs just right, or you're gonna go in under the log and bash your head open and die. Of just knowing when to push it, when to throw in a joke, just whatever he could do to not only keep Michael talking, but to keep it fun for the audience and not to turn it into boo hoo hoo, I was gonna kill myself. It was magical to watch. He was so good at that. So in our case, I mean, I guess it's different because it was me and you having a fight, but he's just, I respect his ability to do that, to be that instigator.
Yeah. Even my memories of it were still laughing at Keith while we were ripping each other to shreds.
Yeah, if anybody, I mean, I do miss hanging out with Keith. That was fun. But even that, I didn't hang out with them that often one-on-one. It was more just in the group, you know.
I wonder what they feel like. Like, if they feel like they're not close to anyone. Like, they just have this court of courtesans.
Yeah, and I mean,
it's various personalities.
It is weird how their old friends have all drifted away, more or less. It's just it's all fans. So, I mean, it's got to be weird for them, too. Like, it's strange all around. I mean, like, for instance, like, I just, like, me and them always got along well enough. I had a couple of weird, whatever, arguments about dumb shit. But then it's kind of like, well, if they don't try to stay on my good side, who's going to edit the DVD? And if I don't try to stay on their good side, then how am I going to still stay with this group of people I know in New York? And, like, it's just weird on both sides. It's definitely weird. It's kind of cool, though. I'm glad I did it. I'm glad that I'm a... Because I really did like that. I love the hell out of that show. Just that I'm like a footnote in the girl history. I think it's just really
You're on
cool.
Wikipedia.
Yeah, that's true. So, that's pretty cool. Okay, listen up, gentlemen. Veterans, vitamins, specimen, letterman, tell a friend. Madeline, amphetamine, medicine, meddling, hematology, skeleton, children, bellatin, reverend. See no evil since Solomon, origin, motherland. Must I begin Babylon? Amphibian, oblivion, I'm living a life of 10 men. Following a mannequin that leads you straight into a brick wall. You shall fall like Berlin. You believe in oppression, lesson, learning, zen. Gathering, final action. Wonder if this endeavor can truly never be comprehended. I blend so sick. Went down to a mic and a pen. Listen, it's the greatest show on earth. The audience is manipulated by the benevolence kind. Mouth, poison, keen, justify, recollect, suck, and boisterous wallow. Devoted, dominate, vanity, vanguard, assimilation, accusation, aggression, stolen light, picture, convexity, contrast, prepare, aware, humanize, imitate, overpower, initiate, dispel, dispel, transgression, transcend, transmission, lurking, average, secluded, passe, mundane, fleece, dim, obscure, evangelistic, prophet, evoke, revoke, dominion, legend, load, flamboyant, judgmental, swift, vex, sex, decadence, and solitude. Maybe I should warn you before I storm on you some more. Disarm you and reform you. Don't want to harm you or alarm you. But nobody's leaving here today. Stop breathing and choke. Ever since I was a child teething and able to speak, I spoke heathen. Under this tent's the greatest show ever seen. Never heard from the evergreen to the Neverland rat. You never dreamed, but you slept. And I witnessed it. It's over your head, it's way out of your grasp now. You're out of weed, out of cash, out of gas, and you're out of style. Out of place, and you're out of line, and you're out of touch, and you're out of time, and you're out of turn, out of tune, and you're out of wind, and you're 1 out of 10 who must be out of their goddamn mind. I'm out of reach, I'm out of your element, out of the ordinary, out of sight, I'm an outsider. It's out of my hands, I'm out of this world, and the mic, and this is the greatest show on earth. AC alone sends his wishes to all. A frightful night out on the Caribbean circus, under the stars, electric, traveling bazaar, packed with laughter. How far do you have to go to see the half-man amphibian show Mars? Sarcasm at its best, but of course the exhibit's dropping right into your neighborhood parking lot structure. Colorful gleaming meme and neon Ferris wheel. The kid and all of us, fool, you want a ticket? What is magic? A woman being sawed in half and live to talk about it? You'll see her spine gyrate.
celebrate. We'll have a gypsy read your palm and tell your fate. We'll have the great Bandini's opening act, a spoon bender. He'll do his thing, he shook his coat and he dropped the fork. Ta-da! It's a concrete forest. Of course it is, of course it is. The lampposts are the oak trees, the street tops are the streams. The natives all stay inside their huts into that bright sunbeams. Then slowly they crept out to get some air. Some argued, some screamed, some beamed, some slept, some retached, some wept, some hobbled, some betrayed, some planted, some begged, some potted. Others laughed, some panicked, some breathed, some movement by the trees, some by death, some magical, logical, something in the loom. Some whom shall I say? Someone is watching every step you take. Some doom is waiting for you in the shed. Some thought, some book, some author's point of view. Some bled, some bland, some music by the band. Some dance, some stood, some drunk, some plaid. Some plant, some growth, some joint, some exotic. Some got it in the end and they bought the form. Some dared, some apple, some charm, some scared. Some hands around your neck, some place, some scalpel, some trouble. Some follow from beginning to end but never could understand the greatest show on earth.
Walked through old Montreal, which was pretty cool. Cobblestone roads, you know, fucking horses, drawn carriages, all that stuff, old-timey bicycles, and just at a bank, hitting the bank machine, and on the side of this post office box, it says TIT. Someone taped up the letters, T-I-T. And I wonder, I don't know, it just sounds like you dirty French with your tits everywhere, but who knows, maybe that means something else. I remember in like 11th grade we had to read a book called Teacock. Titcock. How can you get kids to read a book called Titcock, English kids, and get them to take that serious? It means like little rooster. Petit cock, teacock, it's called Titcock, come on. Of all the French books in the world, don't pick Titcock. Yeah, pousse to open the door. I was just talking about the tit over here. Tit.
Tit. Pousse.
Pousse.
What's tit stand for?
I don't know. I was just saying, I assume tits. But then there was that book, Titcock, that I had to read in 11th grade. That had nothing to do with tits at all. So who knows?
I'm sure terribly disappointing for you as a 5th grader.
It was 11th grade.
11th grade.
So extra disappointing. I mean, of all the French books in the world, why would you get the one called Titcock and expect English kids to read that? Seriously. Come on, French. Get with the program. Get on the trolley. So we were just walking through this enormous empty mall. That place was huge. And the lineup for the coat check, which, I mean, it said it was a cloakroom, you know. It had a little hanger sign. What else could it be? But it was huge. People were just lining up like, I don't know what was going on in there.
But there was nothing. There was no one walking around in the actual mall.
Yeah, it's very creepy. It was very strange. So we just walked, though, by the umpteenth Tim Hortons. And as mentioned, the Tim Horton is a hockey player. And that made me think of Mike Myers of
Wayne's World
fame, exactly, is Canadian. And
gay.
Is he really?
Yeah, that's the word on the street these days.
I just heard he was like an asshole, whacked out fuckface these days, mostly.
Well, also.
Like, no eye contact, all that shit. Gets freaked out about every little thing. But there's a pretty strong, there's strong evidence to be made, or strong case to be made, that Wayne's World was intended to be set in Canada as like a reflection of his crappy Canadian youth. It's just that if you tried to actually set it in Canada, suddenly it becomes a movie about Canada, and no one wants to go, and there's no funding, and, you know, it's a whole different thing. But the two main signs are that instead of Tim Hortons, they have Stan Makita's Donuts. they just change it for a different sports celebrity instead of Tim Hortons. And the other one is the ball hockey in the streets, you know? Car!
Yeah.
That's totally who, Canadian.
Who plays hockey in America?
Right, and that is like a Canadian staple, summer ball hockey on the street, saying car, like it's these little cues.
So people do that in Canada? I mean, we did it once we saw that movie.
But. Well, yeah, like that's the thing. It never occurred to me that that was a regional tip-off, tip of the hat. Because that's just how it is, right? But so it's like these little, I don't know if Mike Myers has ever commented on this specifically, but I think it is these little tips of the hat to Canada. Because to us, Stan Mikita's Donuts, that was a funny joke, but that didn't make any sense to Americans. So, Wayne's World is a Canadian movie, that's all I'm saying.
Is there a parade going on?
That's just an average day in Montreal.
Ooh, pretty.
Yeah, I don't know. Want to walk down?
Yeah.
Cool.
Canada's amazing. I really have to say.
This city is pretty fucking sweet, right? It's really growing on me a lot.
It's clean. It's beautiful. The people are friendly. Everyone's smiling.
Well, it's like that big-ass mall
it's
we just walked
through. It's a little
expensive. Yeah, that's true. The city does seem. Well, maybe we're just stuck in touristy-built areas. But, yeah, and, like, alcohol's brutal kicking the balls. Yeah. Way too expensive. But, oh, it smells good. I gotta get something to eat soon.
Yeah, we gotta eat.
What was I just saying? Oh, yeah, like that big mall we were just in, it was all clean and there was just no homeless-y guys stumbling around fucking shit up.
Which is funny because there's a lot of homeless-y guys here in town.
There is, there's quite a number. And I'm sure I'm wrong about this, but I just can't help imagining that there's no butting heads with the cops. Like, it's just, they'd be just, like, if they find a guy, they'd just be like, hey. You know what you're doing isn't cool. Take it to that, you know, shitty hanging garden park where all your people hang out. And he's like, you're right. Like, it just seems like such a meh.
And, you know, crazy idea here. Maybe showing people respect like that leads to them behaving respectfully toward their environment.
Maybe. And I'm sure part of it is just because there's such a smaller population and so much more socialism and healthcare, especially, that you just can get away with being a bottom dweller at a higher level than you can in, like, New York. I'm sure to a homeless guy, he's like, fuck you, it's not like my life's easy, but put him in New York and I bet he would die. Yeah. They seem a little softer and less frazzled around here.
I mean, the amount of attractive street kids that I'm seeing, where it's like, there are no such things as attractive street kids in New York because you get cut up and sold if you are attractive.
Yeah, here it really is. It's the fun game. Urban camping, like you were saying.
It reminds me of when I was in college, there was some snafu where, like, some group wanted to protest the fact that all of our, like, FSU wear, all of our college wear was made by sweatshops.
Right.
And the university wouldn't let them protest on, like, the main area in front of the main building, the picturesque building. So, and they said that they had to protest in this other area that was, like, by the dorms. And people got pissed off. So they decided to pitch a tent camp, like a tent city, on this green that was by the dorms where they were allowed to protest. And, you know, it started out as, like, for a reason, you know, like, oh, we're protesting the sweatshops. But it went, like, all summer. It went all year and all summer. And by the end, it was just, like, this cool place to hang out. Like, I had friends who started it. Like, I knew all the activist kids. I was poli-sci in theater. All of them were fucking activist weirdos.
Right.
And I knew when it started. But then, like, a couple months into it, it's just a place you go when you want to go hang out on campus and party in the tent city. And you're just, like, there was, like, a lesbian contingent, and there was just, like, the cool, weird kid stoner contingent. And it was just urban, it was just camping.
So they didn't stop the sweatshops?
No, amazingly.
Weird.
I know. You'd think.
Yeah, I've really found this just
that kind of action would really get a response, but.
I've really found my tolerance for activism in general has just plummeted to nothing, because, like, maybe this is a Canadian thing too, but just like the dumbest stuff of just like people really just need to feel like they're doing something. Like in my hometown right now, the bus station is moving from downtown, where it was pretty accessible, to sort of the edge of town. It's only 20 minutes away by foot. It's not that much further, but people are like protesting. They don't want the bus to move, but the company that owns the building doesn't want the bus to. It's like business. It's a business that is above their heads. There's no reason for it to involve them. And the fact that they feel like they have a choice about where the bus station is, it's this weird sense of entitlement that people have. It makes no sense. Like, they think they're more important than they should be. And I do think individuals are important, but they're like putting themselves into a situation that they're not important, and they have nothing to do with it, and it doesn't matter. It's the bus station. How often do you take a bus? Twice a year?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of a silly thing. Like, I could,
I mean like the Greyhound bus, not the normal bus.
Okay, I could see individuals protesting, you know, certain businesses or, you know, certain quality of life things involving your community, and that's cool. You want to be a part of how you build your community. But a bus station, fuck, it's a bus station.
Also in Vancouver, when the buses went from $2 to $2.25, big protest. Oh my God, how can they do this? So we're going to all take the bus that day and refuse to pay the fare, fuck up the whole system, and blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, if you buy the monthly pass, which anyone who's taken the bus often enough to give a shit about this has got a monthly pass, the government was like, we understand people don't like this price hike, so if you continue to buy the monthly pass, it's not going to go up in price. So they were protesting exactly nothing, absolutely nothing. They just need to protest to feel important. It's just so lame.
That might be in Canada. Like, yeah, I agree, activism is generally lame. But, you know, in Canada, it seems like there's so much less to protest. Like, yeah. Things are so much more considerate and considerate of, like, your day-to-day experience. You know, the way the city is set up is with such an eye towards your comfort as an individual, as a person.
Oh, that was another thing that cracked me up in Vancouver is on Canada Day, they have Canada Day, you know, rally, anti-Canada Day rally, and Cannabis Day. Just pick your poison of just a reason to get together for no reason.
Ah, oh, Cannabis Day. Do they have 420 in
Yeah, Canada? And it's everyone just goes in Vancouver, because it's a big pot town, to the front steps of the art gallery, and everyone just sits there and smokes, and it's... And that's where the designated protest zone is. They do have a designated protest zone. You have to sign up, and here's when you... It's so stupid. Yeah, so...
I thought it was neat when I was in D.C. You can do, like, a... We had to do press conferences occasionally. I had to throw press conferences. And all you do is just, like, write a letter into the government and say, hey, we want to have a press conference in front of X, Y, and Z monument. And they're like, okay. And it's fine. You can do whatever you want. I thought that was pretty cool. I mean, we were, like, just saying... Protect the Clean Air Act. Meh. They're trying to change it. This is our protest. Or not, we weren't protesting. It was a press release. But you could just do that.
That is kind of cool.
Like, any group in the world can just say, hey, we want to be in front of the Washington Monument. We're cocksucking neo-Nazis for, you know, consanguination. And
although,
it's fine.
There must be a reason why those guys never seem to have press conferences. It probably is behind the scenes. They kind of divert them, maybe. But it is cool.
I wonder. I feel like it would be open.
But that is one thing I remember that I figured out pretty late about New York, but that made sense. Me and Brad on our little talking in Tim Hortons thing that we did for the end of the New York Keith and the Girl live show, we mentioned this. Oh, I think we mentioned it there. Anyway, just, yeah, the notion of what would be nice for people. What would be nice? We definitely said this, yeah. Is just not a consideration that they can have in New York. There's no option.
There's no room. There's no money.
Yeah, so it doesn't...
There's too many people who are not... who don't care.
Yeah.
Like, okay, you're uncomfortable, fuck you. I'll take your spot, you know?
I remember even with, like, Central Park, that made a lot more sense to me when Matt Bray explained to me how those rocks that jut out of the... out of the ground, it's that the bedrock is so high up, you can't build buildings there. They'll just fall over.
Like, might as well make a park.
And they're like, well, we need to make a park so people don't go crazy, and we can't build here anyway. So it's like, that makes more sense of why that park is so big, because it never fit to me. It's like, why is that one park?
Central Park is really nice, though. I mean,
it's
we
not
walk
bad.
Through it occasionally. It's my godsend. Like, during my lunch hour, I'll just go and walk through. I found a little place with a waterfall where I can, like, pretend that I'm someplace nice.
And like I was saying the other day, there's that one part of it that I found in Grand Theft Auto. They recreated perfectly with the fountain and then the bathrooms that are on those underground steps. And that was just neat to be like, I've been there. That's cool.
But that guy, Thoth.
What was that?
Thoth? Weren't you there? It was like a guy, he wears eyeliner and he's kind of vaguely Indianish dressed and he's got a big sign that says Thoth and he dances around and he's got like some little pixie helper girl who looks like a...
I don't remember him at all.
A rave rescue. Huh. You never saw him?
No.
Maybe that was when I was with Bo. This is a New York institution.
Maybe that guy's in the game. I could punch him in the mouth, you know?
That'd be great.
In the game. this place called?
Bar St. Sulpice.
Right, so this is a, I guess, somewhat famous place. It's on St. Denis. And, yeah, it just seems like you're saying, it seems like it should be frat boy douchebag central.
Yeah.
It's just like a big-ass place where Bud is advertised everywhere.
And the pitchers are cheap.
And the chicks are all kind of in the shorts and the little tank tops. But it got kind of cold outside, so we came inside. And the music's been kind of, like, cool and, like, fucking...
Very European.
Yeah, very, like, there's a word I'm looking for, and I can't think of what it is. Anyway, this reminds me of when I was in Montreal last, in 2003. I read a newspaper article comparing Montreal and Toronto, because Bruce Springsteen was playing, like, 3 shows in Toronto and only 1 in Montreal, whereas Coldplay was playing 1 in Toronto and 3 in Montreal. Like, there's just that
a difference in taste?
Yeah, just that word I can't think of, but there's, like, a European thing that the French are way more into. They way more would prefer, like, a synthesizer to an electric guitar type of thing. So, yeah, it's interesting that even at this kind of bar, you get cool, smooth sounds. Like the urbane sounds of the metro.
Yeah, you would expect like some fucking Lil Wayne to be blasting in some bullshit place like this.
Yeah, instead we got Portishead when we came in.
Yeah, that was great. Walking in playing Portishead.
And not only Bjork, but I don't remember the name of the song, but it's the quietest song on her second album. It's like all that she wanted was good, whatever that song is. So I was thinking I might play some Air. Air seems appropriate.
Oh, which one? Which song? Sexy Boy.
Maybe Sexy Boy, or there's All I Need is really good. Femme d'Algent is awesome.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It's one of those. Something from Air. Yeah, they're totally good.
Thank you.
Maybe I'm just looking for metropolitan. Maybe that's the word I was looking for.
Metropolitan. I like that. Yeah.
I think that kind of seems like it sums it up.
But like even in metropolitan areas of America, you don't get good music like this in a shitty bar like this. Not that this bar is shitty. I mean, it's very nice.
And it's huge.
It's fucking huge.
It's like 3 stories tall and a huge ass patio with like hundreds. Weird.
Yeah, you wouldn't expect to be able to fill up a place like this if you were thumping music like this, you know? They were just playing Fatboy Slim. And not like one of his club bangers, like a fucking B-side of Fatboy Slim, you know?
Yeah, like, listen, let's listen, shall we?
I mean, maybe that's a poor example.
No, but I was thinking that, to me, sounds very French, like just something French people would be into.
Yeah, you know, wearing their, like, kind of see-through sunglasses and their spiky hair with their silk-screened hoodies. We're seeing a lot of that around here.
Bump the house in. Bump the house in. Bump the house in.